Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Oh, now that's what I like. All right. My name is Jay Schmelzer. I'm one of the group program managers on the Visual Studio team in Redmond. And I have to admit, I'm extremely excited to have the opportunity to be here today, not only because we're getting to talk about Visual Studio 2010, a product that my team and I have been working on for a number of years now, but also because I'm here in Chicago, a place where I actually started my career. Spent a good part of 10 years doing software development here in the Chicago area, so hopefully we can share some love back and forth during the presentation, have some fun. Just so you guys know, there's a keynote going on in the next room. It's the IT Pro guys. I told that keynote presenter that developers get way more excited, so he should be ready for some loud cheering, some clapping. So feel free to, you know, it'd be great if they start pounding on the walls or open that little door and ask us to be quiet. So if you start feeling, you know, excited, that's okay. We won't be offended. All right. Love it. So I think one of the things that really has struck me over the last few years is, and really actually when you think about it as a software developer, the course of the last probably 8 to 12 months is really a very exciting time for us when you think about it. You know, it started with the release of Windows 7. You know, in the fall we disclosed the Windows Phone 7. At MIX in the spring, we actually started talking about the development experience for Windows Phone and how we as Visual Studio developers were going to be able to take advantage of that platform. A couple weeks ago, we launched Visual Studio 2010, .NET Framework 4. Shortly after that, Silverlight 4 came out. You know, in the last couple of weeks, we started seeing Office 2010 and SharePoint 2010 become available to MSDN subscribers, and in the next few months, we'll see that product officially launch and become generally available. I mean, what better time to be a software developer than right now, right? And what we're going to do over the course of the day is spend some time to show you how we have spent the last 3 years really focusing on ensuring that you, as Microsoft developers, could take advantage of the power and capabilities of all those platforms using Visual Studio and the existing skills you have today. So, because really, when you think about it, everything we do, everything we interact with, our entire lives really run on the code you guys write. That's what runs businesses. That's what really enables us to do the things we can do today. So it's my honor to be able to create a tool that allows you to do that. It's great to see the kinds of things you do. I'll be around throughout the day, so hopefully we'll have some chances to talk. I'd love to hear the kind of stuff that you're doing. With that, let's kind of get into it. A couple years ago, about 3 years ago almost to the day, some of us in the group started thinking about, okay, what do we need to do next? And really, we started looking at things and we realized, wow, there's a set of stuff that just hits every one of us, right? You're sitting down as a software developer. Some of you heard in the intro video the idea that, you know, software developers really are craftsmen, right? You spend time, you think about the problem you need to solve, you really start focusing in on it. You kind of get into a zone, right? And now you're ready to attack it, bam. Someone walks in your office, asks you for some help, right? Boom. You lost it, right? Because of course, we're developers, we're helpful people too, right? We want to go help somebody else get their problem solved. So we stop everything, we go over to help them out, we come back and all that is gone, right? Just constant interruptions. We also know that the technology is evolving very, very quickly, right? And we at Microsoft are definitely leading the way in some of those efforts. You know, we have things like, you know, mobile phones, we have the cloud, we have, you know, all of these kinds of capabilities. And our customers, your customers, are starting to expect the same experiences out of their software, right? How do you keep up? How do you stay current in all of those things? Let's face it, most of us don't have the opportunity to sit down and just build software by ourselves, for ourselves. We have to collaborate, whether it's with other developers, whether with a project manager that's always asking you for the status of the project, when is it going to be done, or in some environments, working with test professionals that are actually going to go and validate that what you wrote and what you built performs the way it was. And you've got to work with all those people, and that presents a bunch of challenges. So one of the things we did was we sat down and said, okay, how can we create a version of Visual Studio that really attacks these set of problems and more, but really focuses in allowing you to stay current, you know, use the skills you have, use the tools you're familiar with, and apply those to the new platforms and technologies. How do we continue to enable good collaboration and teamwork, right, across people? How do we, you know, we'll talk about it in a little bit and we'll see some things we did, but how do we let the tools really work for you as developers so you're spending time doing what you want to do, writing code, not writing status reports, not sitting in status meetings telling people what's going on, right? You're actually doing what it is you love to do and what people are paying you to do and create great software. And it all comes to Visual Studio 2010. We're excited. 2 weeks ago, we announced the availability. It's available now for immediate download. You can go out, you can get it, start using it, and start building, you know, great software with it. Over the next, you know, few sessions, the rest of the day, we will start looking in at some of the things we've done. We'll spend some time in this keynote giving you a really quick peek at a few of them, kind of a teaser for the rest of the sessions throughout the day. I encourage you to stick around all day, you know, engage in those discussions and see what is available in Visual Studio 2010. What's one of the biggest things that holds people back from actually adopting a new version of Visual Studio? It's the tools available in the ecosystem, whether they're from our partners, the third-party vendors, or the community-built tools, right? We rely on this very vibrant ecosystem of partners and the community to build extensions into the Visual Studio environment, whether they're controls that we can use in our applications or productivity tools we can plug into the development environment. If those tools aren't ready, the product's not ready for you. So this time, we went out, we identified the top 50 partners, top 50 customizations, extensions that you wanted and you said were important in the product, using telemetry from Visual Studio itself, using surveys and forum kind of posts talking to you about it, and we engaged directly with all 50 of those partners to ensure that they were ready the same day we were, and thus the product was ready. So I'm proud to say that the great work of all those partners, all 50 of them, have solutions ready right now available for Visual Studio 2010, so you can take advantage of their tools with our tools and get the full experience that you expected. A number of them are here today across the hall in the Partner Expo, so I encourage you to go talk to them, understand what they're doing, take advantage of learning what they've got available to you. So let's talk about some of those core principles, right? The idea of, you know, the fact that you're getting ready, you've finally got the idea in your head, you're ready to go down and start writing that first bit of code, and someone comes and interrupts you. Fortunately, we quite haven't figured out how to prevent someone from coming in your office and interrupting you yet. We're working on that. We've got some ideas of how we can do it. But in the meantime, we looked at how can we make Visual Studio allow you to maintain a set of context around what you've done, right? Keep you kind of in that zone and allow you to put some things off to the side while you go help somebody else with their solution or their problem. Rather than spending a lot of time talking about it, let's just take a quick look at some of the productivity things we've done inside of Visual Studio that really try to help and aid in you building solutions quickly and working in this kind of an environment. So yes, I'm a product guy, which means I get to actually do some of my own demos and show you some stuff. So I'll bring some other people up too, but if I decide to. Otherwise, I've got their machines and I might just do it. So let's switch over. Here we have Visual Studio 2010. And in this case, what I've got is a web project. It's using an MVC pattern. And so imagine that what I'm doing is I'm working on something. I've got, you know, a coworker's come in and asked me to actually go and help them improve this site a little bit. So what we can do is let's just go ahead and kind of control F5 and take a look at what we have here. We'll let Visual Studio kind of come up, bring up our browser, and we'll see, you know, our Blue Yonder airline site. You'll see Blue Yonder is going to be kind of a theme throughout most of the day, just a fictitious company we made up. You see that I can kind of scroll around. We can go into our About page. We've got a little gallery of images here. We go down, I can choose one of these images, and, you know, I can see it, but, man, you know, the page isn't all that great. It's not real interactive. Our customer is really expecting something a little bit more. They're not expecting all these refreshes. So what my coworker asked me to do is kind of come in and help them make this just a little bit richer, a little nicer experience for that. So let's go in and see how we can do that within Visual Studio. So we'll let this get out of the way. So here we have the Visual Studio Web Form Designer. still the same, you know, basic core design experience that we had in Visual Studio 2008. We still have design view. We have the source view. We have that split view. So if I want to go and kind of work and see my changes being updated in the designer while I'm working in the markup, I can do all of those things still with this tool. In our case, let's go ahead and switch back to the source view. And what we'll do, whoops, sorry, get that out of the way, is let's go take advantage of some productivity features we've added into and extended into the HTML ASP.NET markup. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to scroll down here to the bottom of my my page. And we'll go in, and we're just going to go and take advantage of the jQuery library that's integrated into Visual Studio and get us a little bit richer feel for that that viewing of the image. We'll put it in sort of a pop-up kind of dialogue and not cause the whole page to refresh. So the first thing I need to do is I need to go, you know, type in a script tag, right? And what I can do now in Visual Studio is we've extended the idea of code snippets into the HTML markup designer. So I can go and take advantage of snippets that complete the standard set of HTML markups for me. The more complicated ones, we do the same kind of replacement highlighting that we do in the code editors, really making you more productive. I think you'll see more of that over the course of today. We can go in here, and now let's just start writing a little bit of jQuery code. And what we'll do is we'll go in, and we will, you know, create a function. You see I'm getting rich IntelliSense against JavaScript and against the jQuery syntax here. So I can go, you know, grab this function. We'll go ahead and create some brace matching there. And then we'll go in and we'll just take advantage of this, and we'll go in and we'll say what we want to do is grab our gallery, kind of photo page. And then we want to do and take advantage of the lightbox capability, lightbox function that's part of jQuery, and actually just go have it display that within a pop-up. And then we'll go ahead and close this stuff off. And now, simple as that, we've gone and added and extended our site with some jQuery kind of capabilities. Let's go launch this again and see what we've got. So we'll bring up our page, go over here to the About, see everything looks mostly the same. When I pick a photo, now you see it's loading itself in this kind of light box or the pop-up. And yes, my resolution is a little too high so the folks in the back can see it, so it's scrolling off, but I now have the ability to just go in and easily view these images without seeing the whole page refresh. I can quickly close them and get back to where I was within that page. Pretty compelling? Okay, well now, maybe there's some other stuff I want to do, right? So let's go in, and what we'll do is we'll just go ahead and, you know, this is an MVC pattern, so we're going to go in and view the controller. We'll go into the controller page. So now we're going to go into that controller code. And, you know, I might not be very familiar with what's going on here, so I can go down and look at some things. Oh, I see that I've got a to-do here. I want to kind of expose these properties as these fields that are private right now as public properties. Now, today in Visual Studio, go through and start typing, you know, replacing dim with public and creating a property syntax, right? Well, with Visual Studio 2010 and the new editor, we've enabled block highlighting, so I can just press the Shift and Alt key and use the arrow key, and you can see I can start highlighting down in a single line, scrolling over and selecting a block of text. And now I can just go in and change this to a public property. Yeah. Now we're talking. And by the way, this is now a public property because in Visual 2010, Visual Basic has included the simple property syntax that you had in C# in 2008. So for simple properties where you're just reading and writing from backing field, you can do it simply by doing that now. Well, actually, what you really want to do is go public property, right? And now you have a simple public property that you can work with and very easily, just like you could in C#. Cool? Now, you know, one of the other things is this may be code that's unfamiliar to me, right? I may not really know what the structure of this thing looks like, or, you know, I see that I can tell that this is probably a very large file just because of the size of the thumbnail over there on the right side, right? But in order to really figure it out, I got to start scrolling up and down. Well, one of the things we did in the editor is we actually allow you to very easily hold down the control key and use the mouse wheel to scroll, and you can start quickly seeing the basic structure of your code file, right? And figure out, okay, where are the big methods? Where are some things I may need to work with? And I see a bunch of code, you know, in a few places. Maybe I want to drill into that. And I can zoom back in, and oh yeah, we can really zoom in if we want, right? And I can go in and start working with this stuff using just a simple scroll wheel. No more going to tools options and waiting for that dialog to come up to play with the font size. You can just quickly go and scroll it up and down. Another thing that I've noticed is, at least for myself, you know, and I've seen this a lot when I go out and visit customers, is more and more people have developer configurations where you have more than one monitor, right? Wouldn't it be nice if Visual Studio was modern enough to recognize that you have more than one monitor and could take advantage of that screen real estate? Well, I don't actually have it configured here to be able to split this across two monitors, but just to give you a sense of what we can do, we can now, with Visual Studio, say I want to take a code window and pop it out into another monitor. I can now take a code window outside of the frame of the IDE, and I could move this all the way over to my second monitor and expand it and let it sit over there. I could have my designer on one monitor. If I have a third, I could have debugger windows over there, and I could be going and running through and taking advantage of the full screen real estate I have available to me, right? No longer am I limited to the confines of that overall shell window. Pretty cool? Okay, so just a little bit, as say, I apologize, my demos are going to kind of be a little teasers, but hopefully that just entices you to stick around. You're going to see more of this stuff throughout the course of the rest of the day. Okay, let's start talking about all of those, you know, platforms and the evolving technologies. That's cool. Apparently you guys don't want to talk about platforms, or the speakers don't. All right. So we've had a number of amazing innovations coming out, and you know, Microsoft really is leading the way in a lot of these things, right? You know, we talked, you know, really early on about the fact that we have Windows Phone 7, right? We have kinds of capabilities like portals and the ability to build collaborative applications on platforms like SharePoint. Windows Server, you know, Windows Server 2008 R2 is an amazing server product with a new improved version of IIS, the new app fabric capabilities built into that server product to make it easy for us to take advantage of a core set of services allowing us to build applications at scale and not have to rewrite all of that kind of core infrastructure that they require. SQL Server 2008 R2, same thing. Great capabilities for us to go and continue managing, persisting, and working with data. The cloud is really becoming, you know, the next big thing for folks. So Windows Azure being out there and those kind of things. Those are all interesting things. And as a developer, especially as a developer that's not a Microsoft developer, that means you've got to learn a lot of new stuff, right? But you know what? We love you. We care for you. We don't want to put you through that, right? So we're going to make sure that Visual Studio allows you to take those skills that you've been building up over the years and apply them to those new platforms, right? And we'll drill into each one of these a little bit. You'll see a couple demos, and we'll do more throughout the day. So let's start with Windows 7. Windows 7 is on its way to being the best and most successful release of Windows in history, right? It is a great platform. It's a great product. It introduces a core set of capabilities that customers are starting to expect, right? How many, you know, you can do a show of hands or you can just nod, but a number of you are probably starting to get requests from your customers that are expecting your applications to take advantage of the same core capabilities they see in Windows 7 and other platforms, like touch, like the ability to interact with a form by just moving your finger across and moving data around by just doing flicks, right? We've integrated the ribbon into Windows more and giving you a better way of discovering capabilities. So I know a lot of people are getting requests from their customers, right, to have that capability in their app, right? Make your app look like Microsoft applications, look like Office, look like Windows, right? So it's familiar, consistent experience for them. And then take advantage of capabilities like the Windows jump list to allow me to quickly navigate into a specific part of my application or the latest things that I worked with, right? All of those things are things we know your customers are asking you for, you know, today, and they'll be asking you for more tomorrow. So we want to make sure Visual Studio and the platform can work for that. Later today, there's a session specifically dedicated to Windows development. We'll look at both how you can do that from managed code applications using things like WPF or Silverlight, as well as those of you that we know still need to work with a native C++ code base. And you'll see how we've gone and brought back great tooling support for things like the MFC wizard and things like that, and built these capabilities into those tools, making it really easy for you to take advantage of Windows 7 capabilities in your native Windows applications. So let's move on to SharePoint. Wow, has this been a successful product for Microsoft. There's lots of ways people describe it. Lots of people have, you know, people are starting to get more and more aware of what SharePoint is about and what SharePoint can do. It's no longer just the place the documents go, right? It's actually becoming a platform, a collaboration platform that we as developers can take advantage of and leverage capabilities on it. At the core, it's an ASP.NET application, right? It's an ASP.NET application that is built to scale to great lengths. So they built a set of services that they needed for the SharePoint product to manage it and allow it to scale that way. And us as application developers, we can take advantage of those same sets of services in our applications. So as you get into SharePoint, I'd really encourage you to take a look at, when you have a SharePoint environment, take a look at it as a potential place for a solution, especially, you know, internal departmental solutions, as well as, you know, enterprise scale content management, public website things. Great services in there, right? I'm not saying it's a one-shot, one-tool-fits-all thing, but it's worth taking a look at. There's some interesting stuff there. But the challenge was, until today, you had no support in Visual Studio for doing anything with it, right? Well, that's not fun. Prior to Visual Studio 2010, to build a simple visual web part, the thing that most people wanted to do first, required 27 individual steps that you as a developer had to perform to create and deploy that web part. And by the way, one of those steps was all the steps of actually writing the code to build the web part, right? The other 26 were just things you had to do to make it work in SharePoint. So let's take a look at what we've done in Visual 2010 to hopefully make that easier. I think we've made it easier. You guys can tell me maybe by making those guys wonder what's going on with some noise. But so let's switch back over to Visual Studio. And we'll collapse this project and clean our workspace up a little bit. Sure, we'll save that. Let's collapse this project. Let's go focus on this SharePoint project I have here. Now what I have is I just have a simple empty SharePoint project. And let's go create a visual web part that allows us to display some data from a list in SharePoint. So what I'll do is I'll go in here, I'll right click, I'll add a new item. And now you already see a list of numerous items, the most common sets of stuff people want to do against SharePoint. We have the item templates right there in the product by default for you. So web parts, you know, application pages, event receivers, all of those kinds of things. So again, we'll create our web part. We'll call it, you know, high pry issues, or we'll maybe spell it a little better, and add that to our project. What you're going to see is it still looks like a pretty common, typical project. Yeah, there's some extra files in here, but you know, we don't have to worry about them too much. But what we have is the Visual Studio's Visual Web Form Designer working in the context of a SharePoint solution. So I can go in here, and I can start dragging and dropping controls, right? So I could go into my toolbox. We could go down, you know, grab some of the standard controls. We could go down in the data area. Maybe I want to grab one of the list view controls and drop it up, you know, into my form. And I can keep working here with the designer. To save us some time, I'm going to switch over into my code view here, and I'm going to take advantage of the thing we demoers get to do all the time and just grab a little code snippet here that just specifies the rest of the template. We'll put it in the right spot for that control, right? So when I switch back to the design surface, we'll see that it's just gone and done some basic layout of the data and got us ready to data bind. Now what I want to do is I want to actually pull data from a SharePoint list. So if I come over here to the Server Explorer, and we'll just pin this for a second, you see that what we've done is we've taught the Server Explorer to be aware of SharePoint. So it can view SharePoint connections, and we can go and enumerate data within our SharePoint environment. And here we see my custom list that tracks my high priority issues. Now, we've also, with SharePoint 2010, enabled you to use LINQ, Language Integrated Query, to query list data in SharePoint. So you no longer have to understand that custom CAML syntax that is the query language of SharePoint. You can just write a link query. The link provider will translate it to CAML for you, right? So it's a very consistent experience for you. Now, one of the things that we've got is I mentioned the partners in the ecosystem. Well, in our case, one of the things that we've got is we've got this new extension manager in Visual Studio that allows me to go out and find extensions to the product, either from the community or from third parties. In our case, what I've done is I've grabbed an extension from the community that allows me to generate one of those link proxies based on a specific site integrated into that Server Explorer. So I've already got it installed and enabled. So let's go in, and when I go select my list here and right-click, you see I have this Get SP Metal definition. When I choose that, that add-in's going to go off and create the proxy that I need. There we go. Added the proxy, right? So I now see this high-priority-issues.cs file is part of my project, and now I can go in and use that to query the list. Oops, so let's go collapse that. We'll go back in here. We'll kind of view the code. And here in the page load event, we will just write the code that we need to actually go connect up to that list and grab the data. And again, to save us a little bit of time, we'll just go in here and grab the data context that I have. So all we're doing, just if you're familiar with Link, all we need to do is go create a context like we normally would. So let me scroll over a bit so you can see it. We're just creating the context to the current site. We're going to grab the issues we want. And we're going to go fix up a couple things here first. First thing I need to do is let's go add a using statement. So we'll just add using system.link. That should clear up a couple of them. And then I didn't actually go and change the name of my control. So we'll just say list, probably list view one. There it was. And taking advantage again of that block highlighting. Pretty cool stuff. We'll go ahead and set a breakpoint in here. And I'll just hit F5. And this is the point where, as a SharePoint developer today, you're madly scrambling around, matching up GUIDs, editing XML files, creating things into a WSP, copying it over someplace, running STS admin to get the solution installed, and then trying to work with, okay, how do I get it on a page? So here we are on our default page. If you haven't seen SharePoint 2010, it incorporates the ribbon, makes it much easier to find common commands within the environment. We'll go edit our page. We will insert that web part. So we'll go choose a web part. We'll go to custom. We see our high pry issues is there. We'll add that to our page. And we've hit our breakpoint. If you've done share, this is usually what I can tell who's been doing SharePoint development. Because the people that are really nodding their heads and excited, they're the ones that used to play guess the process to attach to game with the debugger, right? Those of you that aren't nodding, you're kind of going, well, that's how it should work, right? So we've got our breakpoint hit. We can step through, get all of our powerful debugging capabilities. We can just hit F5, let our page finish loading, go back to the page, kind of get out of the edit mode. And here we see we have a set of issues that have shown up, right? Either just some made-up stuff around maybe what happened at an airline. the sound cutting out is kind of an amusing comment. Okay. So that's just a really quick look at how we've gone and tried to improve that SharePoint developer experience. Again, whole session later today on it. I encourage you to go and check it out, and they'll go into a lot more detail of some of the capabilities. But hopefully, a little bit easier than what it was, not so scary anymore. Yeah. All right, so let's talk about the cloud. Let's talk about Azure, right? So this is a place where I think it's safe to say we've all been learning together what the cloud really is, what it really means, right? And we've definitely been learning quite a bit. You guys have definitely helped us kind of hone our thinking, and I think we've done that a little bit together. And I think one of the things that's starting to bubble to the surface is people are really starting to think about the cloud not so much as, you know, a place to just put something and have it run, but really about a set of core IT infrastructure services that can be available to me. You know, they have common attributes that you hear people use, which talks about, you know, the fact that this core infrastructure is available, that it's scalable, that it's elastic, that it can expand based on the needs of my site, right? I don't have to go and provision my environment for what I think is going to be the max capacity that the site's going to need to support, right? I can let it expand as the needs of the environment. As I'm running a promotion, I can expand and put some more roles out there, give myself some more availability. As the promotion ends, I can scale it back, right? I don't have to have all these machines in my environment. The other thing we're hearing and we know about is that you want that experience, whether you're doing it on-premise in your data center, in a hosted environment, or of course completely in the cloud kind of space. Now, that does bring some challenges as an application developer, and one of the things we want to do is make sure that you as Visual Studio developers can have a familiar experience for building and targeting solutions that are going to go to the cloud or be on-premise. And so one of the things you'll see in a minute is how we can go and enable that with Visual Studio 2010. I mentioned the phone. How many folks are excited about Windows Phone? I can tell you that anybody that you see today that's wearing a blue shirt that says Microsoft or a black shirt that says has Visual Studio on it, we're very excited about the phone. We're really excited to see that thing come out. You know, this is a place where, again, we want to make sure that as developers, you can take advantage of the skills you're building up. So we're making sure that folks that can, you know, as you're building Silverlight applications, you can use those skills to build the application for the phone. The other thing we've heard loud and clear and seen in the ecosystem is that, hey, as developers, I want to be paid for my app, right? I'd like to make some money and sell this application. And we're going to enable you to do that through the new Windows Phone Marketplace when the phones become available. Rather than spending too much more time talking about it, let's bring Doug Handler, one of the technical product managers, correct, from Microsoft up, and have him show us what this experience is like. Hey, Doug.
Hey.
You too.
I'm Vivian too.
Oh, you probably need that.
I do.
Well, thanks, Jay. Again, let's give Jay a round of applause. He will be back, but let's give Jay a round of applause. Another minute. Great, thank you. So, as Jay said, one of the things that with Visual Studio 2010 we wanted to ensure is that we could take you can use your existing skills and develop for Azure as well as for the phone. So you really just, it's another platform, another extension for yourself. So what I want to do today is I want to kind of combine the two experiences here by creating an Azure service that then you can consume in a mobile app that I'm currently kind of building. It's a little game that I've been working on. So what I'm simply going to do is just start a regular project, and it's going to be a cloud project here. And I'm just going to name this, let's say, Game Lobby. Again, spelling is always important. And then Azure Visual Studio provides you a bunch of different web roles here. I'm just going to connect to the web service role and just change this to friend service. So my little game that I'm producing here ultimately is an animation type of game where I'm going to go and connect to my friends that are currently stored in SQL Azure in the cloud, and then consume it in my app and play it on my device. So we'll get to that in a second. And we'll wait for Visual Studio to produce everything. I have a little resolution issue here. So the first thing I want to then go ahead to do is I'm going to add a new WCF service. And you're going to notice that the amount of code that I actually type is pretty minimal, even though I am going to have that little presenter cheat. But you'll notice that even the number of lines of code is pretty small here. So then I added my service here, and now all I need to do right now is just identify what my operation is going to do. So this is my first little cheat. And I'm just going to grab the interface here and not delete that code. And one of the cool things is in 4.0, the framework, VB, which I'm doing here, no longer needs that line continuation thing. So we'll just take that out. Yeah, I didn't like that. I guess there's some VB people in the world. So the second part of the thing is I actually need to get to my data. My data is actually stored up in SQL Azure. So getting your data from Azure is pretty simple here because, well, SQL, yeah. It's pretty simple because all you have to do is similar to what we've done with getting data from your local database, you can just use the same approach. In this case, then I'm going to use Entity Frameworks, and I'll just call this Game Lobby and press Enter. And we're going to walk through a quick, simple data model here. the wizard, pretty familiar. When it comes back, I'm just going to grab all the tables to kind of keep things rolling here.
So Doug, you're grabbing a definition from a SQL Azure database, and you're using the same experience as if you were doing it with
a local. Is. Pretty simple. And so we're there. So now we have our service done, our entity models in place. And if I hit Control F5, the app fabric local, whoops. Oh. Let's see what happened here. Oops, forgot to add my code.
Gotta implement this.
I forgot to add the code.
Marketing. Oh, wait.
If the product team would build a product that knew what I wanted to do where I didn't have to write code.
Touche.
So what will happen is the app fabric will start up, which is, allows me to debug locally, so I don't have to push everything to the cloud, debug, bring it back down, debug, bring it back, push it back up. We will start the app fabric. There it is. And then IE will launch telling me that my surface has been created. I promise you it will tell me that. There you go. I've been assured that. So my service has now been created. So now I have my service running in the cloud. So I'm going to switch over now and actually use this game that I created, the Marinette game. And what I'm going to do with this game is I'm going to actually consume that service. So develop for Windows Phone 7, it's pretty simple. It's, if you've already developed with Silverlight or even some WPF development, this look and feel is pretty similar to what you've already experienced in the past. In this case, then, I'm just going to grab a button, dump it on my designer. And as you can see, the device is skinned to the way my application will look. And you have your choice of, again, with Silverlight experience, you can either change it in the properties or in the XAML. I'm just going to change it in the XAML. And because Jay is a Cubs fan, I'll give Jay the benefit of being a Cubs fan there. I'm a Red Sox fan, but, you know.
Just hit F5.
There's no love in this room anymore, is there? So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and go and get my service that's running. You can see here it's been locally grabbed. And I'm going to go and retrieve it from the app fabric. And I'm just going to rename my namespace. Let's call it Game Lobby. And very quickly we'll have added this. So now we have a namespace in place. We have our service running. Now all we have to do is add some code. So I'm just going to double-click on the button. And I'm going to grab the button that will actually implement. Now this one-line piece of code, pretty simple. It allows me to transition between different screens. A little code I didn't want to deal with, so I just dragged and dropped it here. And now I'm just going to jump into my eyes would work for me. My friend XAML. And one of the things I wanted to show you here on my friend XAML screen, and you know, let's just play a little scroll out because it's hard to see, is again the device experience looks the same. It's just been skinned. I have a list box here and I have my designs. So I'm just going to jump into the code. And I am being queued up to where to put my piece of drag and drop code. Whoops. As you notice, I've been able to switch between C# and VB. In the current version that I'm running for WinPhone, we are currently in C#, but we will be later on supporting VB down the line. So we haven't neglected all the VB people. And then all I have to do is run our app, press F5.
Ooh.
And I have a touch screen here, so I can... decided not to work. My touch isn't working. Okay. So my app loaded, my people loaded, but my touch is not working. I apologize for that. So let me try again. Well, it ran, but it didn't run.
So, not really quite sure what's happening with this one.
It's still, it looks like it's still deploying.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow, it's taking a while.
I think you ran into a pump stand.
Wow.
By the way, that's his boss.
It hit the brick wall.
Didn't somebody jump over the wall and catch the ball before I went out of the park?
All right, well, fortunately for you, Doug, yeah. There's a whole nother session later today.
Yes.
And actually, there is a Windows 7 phone in the building. So stick around for that session. You'll see it. You'll see him working with it. If you're nice, he may even let you come up and touch it. But awesome.
Okay, sorry about that.
Sorry. You can give it. Thanks, Doug.
Thanks. This gentleman. Oh, sorry, mate. Had a little t-shirt for you. No, it actually it wasn't.
Okay, we talked a little bit earlier about the fact that for the most part, a lot of us as software developers don't have the honor and the privilege to build a solution by ourselves, for ourselves. We, you know, nobody else relying on us, nobody else asking us to do it. I mean, we can probably do that in our spare time in the evenings, but for our job, we're working with a team, right? And when we talk about collaborating, one aspect of it is really with other developers, right? So we're talking about the fact that we need to go and have an ability to share code, right, across different folks, right? And sometimes when sharing code and working with other people, that means I'm going to be looking at code that I didn't write, right? So how can we go and ensure that with Team Foundation Server, we've enabled this great code sharing and collaboration experience? We believe that every developer should be able to use Team Foundation Server as part of this collaborative model. As part of that, last fall, we announced kind of a deal, an acquisition that was referred to as Team Prize, made it available for developers that are not using Visual Studio, using a development tool on another platform, on the Mac, writing Java, to actually go and interact and store their code in TFS, Team Foundation Server, along with the rest of us. That product is now officially, you know, is now being released under the Microsoft brand. It's referred to as Team Explorer Everywhere, and it's available for those developers now to go and they can have some of the same goodness that we as Visual Studio developers get with Team Foundation Server. So I think that's a big thing, especially for large environments where you have those disparate kinds of code bases working across multiple platforms. I mentioned the fact that part of collaborating with developers means we're going to be having other folks' code, right? It would be really nice if everybody put this kind of stuff in their code. We're not quite there yet. We're working on that one too. But let's face it, there are times where, you know, you're going to go, and we know that a lot of you have to spend a significant amount of your time supporting, maintaining, and enhancing an existing application, right? And that typically means an application where you did not write it to begin with. So we've gone and invested pretty heavily in Visual Studio 2010 in a set of code discovery and understanding tools allowing you to go and navigate through and get a sense of, okay, what's going on in here, right? We can look at it as a positive way of what's the goodness that someone created for me, right, that I get to go work with. Or you could look at it as what's the mess that I have to go understand, right, and untangle. But either way, right, giving you the way to use some standard ways, you know, whether it be architectural diagrams, UML kind of sequence diagrams, to go and understand how are things working? How is this set up so that I can actually have a chance of getting in and working with it? We talked about the project managers. I've been that guy. I don't want to be that guy anymore, and I'm talking about the one, yeah, there's only one guy, so it's the one asleep. Nothing as a developer is worse than creating a status report, right? Except sitting in the status meeting, listening to everybody else's status reports, right? So why can't we go with Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server and create an environment where the product, the tools, are creating these reports based on the underlying data that it's gathering as you're working, right? I'm talking about things like work items, bugs, right? Those kind of things that, let's face it, it's the source of truth in your project, right? You can't lie about the number of bugs you have. Because they're there, you can close them, but we can see that too, right? You can go and let's create a set of reports that allow you to go and do that. So today, you know, we've got a little time during the keynote, we've got a session right after this, where we'll go through and look at a lot of these kind of capabilities. I've been that guy too. You're the developer, you've got someone that's testing your software, whether it's a test professional, whether it's a user doing user acceptance testing, and they fire a bug over and say, you know, button doesn't work, or something like that, right? And you see that in the bug report, you see that in your mail, and you're just like, oh, this is gonna take a while, right? Because you don't have the data, right? You don't have the understanding. In a lot of cases, they've given you everything that they thought they could about what it was that caused the bug, how they got there. You still can't reproduce it on your own machine. Well, what if, using Visual Studio, you could go in and see exactly what it was they did? What if you had a screen capture video that was being recorded as the person was doing the test, and you saw everywhere they clicked, you saw every button that they pressed, you saw every error message that they got? What if that part of that bug contained information and data about the conditions of the system, what versions of components they were running, what the network stack looked like, what the processor load looked like, what the memory consumption looked like? What if you had TiVo-style debugging? So you could actually go and open up and play back the exact state of that application when the exception happened. We can do that, right? So rather than continue to talk about this a little bit, let's go ahead and bring Clark up, take a look, quick look at just some of these capabilities.
Hey, I decided that it wasn't hard enough, so last night I changed it all.
Awesome. Why is there a red light on the stage, Clark?
Because COM ports are cool. So
you really
Jay
work.
Dumped this VB app in my lap.
Hey, that's a whole pile of goodness right there.
That's a whole bag of awesomeness. So I decided to make this kind of real world. We actually have inside here, this is the Source Control Explorer. I have...
Oh.
Well, of course.
That was my job.
That worked way better in rehearsal. And there is Source Explorer. So I took the code, put it inside Source, just like everybody else would, and then started branching it. Because what's the point of a demo if you're just doing things off the file system? Let's create moving parts. So I have my main trunk line, I have a feature one and a feature two. But when I got up this morning, or right after I finished this, I went to my bugs and I saw that Jay actually put a couple out there, which was a little interesting since it was his app. So the first thing I'm going to look at, I need to just kind of take a little navigation here. I've got this unhandled exception. He made it critical. I see I passed a few things. I've got some video. In the interest of time, I'm going to skip the video. Oh, I've got a screenshot. Anybody see this screen before? Yes, we've all seen it a few times. So departure and arrival can't be the same. That's somewhat helpful. Would have been nice if I had the HTML. IntelliTrace. Let's check that one out. Actually, let's go look at the other bug too. Number two, departure. Oh, that actually looks kind of the same, yet I didn't quite get as much information, so I'm going to have to talk with that tester. Let's go back here. Bug 19, IntelliTrace. So I've got a number of threads running. I've got some exceptions, some HTTP exceptions. That's pretty interesting. Well, you know what? Let's just run it. I'm now taking that log that was saved with my bug inside of TFS, and I can actually play through it. I can step through it, just like you step through code that you normally work on. Oh, I can see actually airport name has a value. With one of the new features inside Visual Studio, I'm going to pin that, and I'm actually going to step through it, and I'm going to see that that actually didn't change. In fact, I can step into it and step through the method. That's pretty cool.
I think you just blew everybody's mind, right?
So this isn't mine. I don't want to go messing up stuff. Let's kind of make sure I'm good. So last night I kind of wrote this, big in your face, let's make sure things are good. So before I start going and fixing code, I see that the status of my build is green. Green is good. Just because I'm a little bit anal, I'm going to go home and queue a new build. Now, I know this is risky for a demo, but how long do you think this is going to take? 5 minutes, white space?
Couple seconds?
Minute? I mean, it is a three-year-old laptop. Well, it's done already. So we know that things are good. Let's go back and fix that file. So we knew that was in a booking controller. Just going to scroll down a little bit. Airport. Ooh, maybe if I just did this. That looks right. Right about there. Now, I'm not real good with VB, but I think this... this might not be right. Airport from. That looks like a some issues right there.
I was in a rush.
Oh, I'm still debugging. So I'm gonna take a wild guess there. It's airport 2. You know, I'm trying to get stuff done. I got to go get that cup of coffee. I'm going to check in my stuff and add a little comments. Jay told me to because he is looking over my shoulder and I want this done. So I'm going to check that in. And right now I leave, right? It's time to go home. I checked in my code. It compiled, ship it. Right? Apparently, that didn't work. I know that because COM5 told me. So, I guess I should have hit Control-Shift-B. I can see that I actually did not do that syntactically correct. It's been a few decades since I've been in VB. I'm going to fix that. I'm going to check that back in. See the integrated check-in experience. Fix Jay's code again. I'm going to check that in. Well, I know it works this time, so you know what? I'm just going to go ahead. I'm going to go into source control, and I'm going to ship this to production. So we're going to actually merge this with the mainline because it's green now. I hit Control-Shift-B, let's ship it. Where did I merge that to?
Maybe.
Let's check that in. First thing you see is that I'm prompted to do a gated check-in. So I was doing a continuous integration build on one line, and I have a gated check-in on another line. This is actually going to make a shell set, build that in the Visual Studio Cloud, if you will, and then if it's good, commit it to source control so I don't mess up the trunk line. So I'm going to say go ahead and build those changes. In the background, you will see this is building. I can put whatever kind of things that I want to inside of that build script. Once that's done, if it's good, it'll then commit it to the source repository. And at one point, I'll get a notification to reconcile my changes locally from the shelf set. Jay? Awesome. It's always nice fixing your code.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So right after this thrilling keynote, Clark and Angela are going to come up and go into more detail on all of these tools. So there's no break. We're going to go roll right into it. So some more exciting stuff to come. Before we do that, I want to talk about a couple aspects of the way the product is available. First of all, we heard from developers, MSDN is a great resource, right? So we wanted to make sure that every Visual Studio developer had the opportunity to get some of that MSDN goodness, right? And so with 2010, we've introduced what we refer to as MSDN Essentials. It's available to the retail person buying Visual Studio Professional at retail. Gives you access to SQL Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows 7 Ultimate, the things you need for core development and testing capabilities. Some people kind of call it a little taste test, because I think once you get a little bit of that, you're going to want more. But at least you have that right out of the gate, right out of the box, even if you're starting with Visual Studio Professional with that Essentials subscription. The other thing we did as part of this product cycle was we simplified the way we package and ship the product. We had a few too many different versions of Visual Studio. It was a little difficult to understand, so we've simplified that down to now Visual Studio Professional, Premium, and Ultimate. One of the things we did as part of that was we created what we refer to as the Ultimate Offer. All you had to do was have an existing valid active MSDN subscription by the time we shipped Visual Studio, and we would upgrade you one level in the product structure. So if you were purchasing what we felt was the equivalent of Premium, you would now get Ultimate, right? If you were purchasing, you know, that kind of model, right? Literally, $1 billion worth of software we just gave away, right? But we really love you guys. You wanted a little more time for that offer to be good, so we extended it to the end of the month. You've got 2 more days, right, to take advantage of that. It worked a little better for the president when he said you had a couple more weeks, but at least I got you 2 days. So if you've got an active MSDN subscription by the end of this month, you will be part of this offer. So I highly encourage you to take advantage of that. It's a lot of great software. So hopefully what you've seen in this very short keynote was how we went and focused with Visual Studio on giving you the ability to be even more productive, kind of stay in the zone when you get there, right? Or at least allow yourself to very quickly rehydrate the zone by putting things off to the side and keeping some sets of stuff available to you. We've seen how you can use Visual Studio and the skills that you've been building up over time to take advantage and target these other platforms, right? Whether it be SharePoint, the cloud, Windows Phone 7, right? You've seen how we're making it easier for you to work in a team environment. You saw how, especially in the, you know, we think we've eliminated the no more repro bug case, right, with all the rich data that we're including as part of test tracking and bugs. You've seen how we can use Team Foundation Server to not only do source code control, but do various levels of build processes. Sorry we didn't ship the red light, but I'm sure Clark will make his code available if you really want to incorporate that. Later, right after this, I think they'll go into a little bit more of the reporting capabilities and show you how hopefully we can eliminate those very dull, mundane status meetings or even creating those reports. So really, at this point, there's only one thing left to do for each of you. Figure out what it is you're going to go do, what you're going to go create with Visual Studio 2010. Thank you very much.